I just turned it on. And so, they're both gone, and I'm here. So you're going to get tired of me, I suppose, before this morning's over. If you will, go ahead and turn to 1 Kings, the third chapter. And we know the story of the children of Israel pretty well. As they left Egypt, they murmured and complained, and only two of them that left Egypt got to go into the promised land. And from there, they conquered enemies and did well, as long as they did what the Lord said. But eventually the day came that they wanted what? Who knows what they wanted eventually? A king. Because they wanted to be like the people around them. You know, there's a lesson right there that can be learned pretty well of trying to be like the people that are around you. You have to be careful. Because that was not the best decision, I think, that they could have made. And this morning, I'd like to just have you all help me discuss about wisdom, about making wise decisions. In my lifetime, since Brother Stevens preached last week, he told some of the problems that he had had and difficulties in life that he had had of making good decisions. You know, I've had those same problems growing up and becoming an older man that I am now. I've had to make a lot of decisions in my lifetime. Some of them have not been the wisest ones that could have been made. I'll certainly admit to that. But I think that I'm not the only one that has had those problems in life. Everyone has problems in that way. Like the children of Israel, they had many problems along the way. When they made the wrong decision, when they were not wise in their thinking and wise in their doing, problems occurred. And we have those same type of things, spiritually speaking, but not only spiritually speaking, in business or in our school life or in our friendships that we have. Problems can be had. And eventually, the children of Israel did receive the king. We know the first king was Saul of the United Kingdom. And the second king was, and then the last king of the United Kingdoms was Solomon, who was David's son. David in 1 Kings, the second chapter, gives Solomon his last testimony. And I'd like to begin there, then we'll go to what Solomon asked the Lord, asked God for, and received. And then I'd like to go to some verses in Proverbs, as time allows, and look at some of the things about being wise, ways that you and I can be wise, according to Solomon. And then we'll move over to the New Testament and go to Matthew, the 7th chapter, and we'll look at being wise, how we can be wise, and emphasize that a little bit. But if you have comments, I'd certainly be glad for you to express those and expect you to, hopefully. And I'll begin reading, then I'll let some of you all read, if you will. I'm going to read the first part of this as an introduction about David's testimony to his son and his charge that he gave Solomon in the second chapter, beginning of verse 1 of 1 Kings 2. Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, now this, I don't know for sure that this was a solemn thing. I know if my dad told me it's time for me to die, and I want to tell you some things, I would be sad. And I think Solomon had a deep love for David. Verse 2 says, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. And keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in His ways, to keep His statutes, His commandments, His judgments, and His testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. You know, just that part right there is something that we could learn from if we had used the thinking and the wisdom that we have, the abilities that we have. To use that as advice for us today as we live in whatever situation we find ourselves. Verse 4 says, that the Lord may fulfill His word which He spoke concerning me, saying, if your sons take heed to their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul, He said, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel. Well, we know Solomon was the last one in the United Kingdom. There was a division. Verse 5, moreover, you know also what Joab and the son of Zeruiah did to me, and what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner the son of Ner, Amasa the son of Jether, whom he killed. And he shed the blood of war in peacetime, and put the blood of war on his belt and was around his waist and on the sandals that were on his feet. Therefore, do according to your wisdom, and do not let the gray hair go down to the grave in peace. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and let them be among those who eat at your table. For so they came to me when I fled from Absalom, your brother. And see, you have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite from Behurim, who cursed me with a malicious curse in the day when I came to Mahanaim. And he came down to meet me at Jordan, and I swore to him by the Lord, saying, I will not put you to death with the sword. Now therefore do not hold him guiltless, for you are a wise man and know what you ought to do to him, but bring his gray hair down to the grave with blood. All of it was not something that we'd think, I suppose, from our fathers. But this was a kingdom, and there were battles that had been fought and things that had to be done. And so he was telling his son these things. So David rested with his father and was buried in the city of David. The period that David reigned over Israel was 40 years. 7 years he reigned in Hebron, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. Then Solomon sat on the throne with his father David, and his kingdom was firmly established. So Solomon becomes king. And chapter 3 this is where Solomon realizes that he needs God's help. Mike, how about reading the first 7 verses of chapter 3 in 1 Kings?
Now Solomon made a treaty with Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and married Pharaoh's daughter, and he brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and the wall all around Jerusalem. Meanwhile, the people sacrificed at the high places, because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. Now the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, ask, what shall I give you? And Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth and righteousness and in uprightness of heart with me. You have continued this great kindness to him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in.
Okay, what was occurring here? What was it he was having? Solomon had what? It was a dream. It was a dream. But God spoke to him in this dream. And Solomon's attitude was what? Was it haughty? It was humble. He was humble. He said he didn't know how to come in, how to go out. And he, I guess, was mindful of the power that God had and what he could give him. What are the high places? What were the high places? That's right. So Solomon was wise in many ways, and he was going to be wise as far as judgments were concerned in being king. But Solomon, in all of his wisdom, made some wrong decisions. And of course it hurt him and it hurt his family and it hurt the children of Israel too when those bad decisions were made. Toby, how about reading verses 8 through 14?
Your servant is in the midst of the people which you have chosen, the great people who are too many to be numbered or counted. So give your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours? It was pleasing in the sight of the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. God said to him, because you have asked this thing and have not asked for yourself long life, nor have asked for riches for yourself, nor have you asked for the life of your enemies, but you have asked for yourself discernment to understand justice. Behold, I have done according to your words. Behold, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you. I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there will not be any among you or any among the kings like you all your days. If you walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and commandments, as your father David walked, then I will prolong your days.
Okay. And then after that, Solomon awoke and realized God has spoken to him. If we'd been in that situation, or if I had been in that situation, and realizing that I was king, I was David's son, I might have been tempted to ask for blessings as far as riches are concerned. I think nowadays you turn on the TV and listen to some of these TV preachers. Have you ever heard them ask for money or ask for physical blessings at all? Yeah, sort of like watching championship wrestling. I turn it on there. They what? That's right. Ask money from the Lord and they give their address. But that's not Solomon's attitude, was it? What did he ask for? Basic. An understanding heart. You know, an understanding heart does well, certainly spiritually, but it helps us day to day in life if we have an understanding heart. Sometimes in the past, I hadn't really understood that other people do have problems, that other people have situations that I'm not aware of. Even here, I know that there are a lot of situations going on. You don't know what's going on necessarily in my life. I could have some real deep problems. And we need to have that understanding heart. And Solomon certainly needed it himself, though apparently David realized that he was already a wise son. He needed help from God as far as being wise, having wisdom. Basically, what is wisdom? Ian, what's wisdom to you? Knowledge with understanding. How is wisdom fulfilled? We may have knowledge. We may know certain things, but if we don't act on it, is that acting with wisdom? A proper application of knowledge. Certainly we have to study, we have to know the truth. And when we know the truth, we need to apply it. And I think we'll look at some of the things this morning.
You pray for wisdom.
You pray for wisdom. And that's something that has been lacking in my life. And if I had prayed for it, then I think I would have gotten more than I have now, for sure. Rick? The decisions that we make, whether right or wrong, have results, have consequences. And if we make the right decisions, then the consequences are more than likely going to be good. And spiritually speaking, that is true. That's always true. But if we make the wrong decisions, then the reverse is true. We'll have to reap the results of the bad decisions that we make. And then we hopefully will correct them. But one of the main things we can do and follow Solomon's example is ask God for wisdom. Ask God to help us through the day. Ask God to help us in future days. Ask God to help our families and help. Ask God to help us all use wisdom. If we all use proper wisdom, we'd have a much better life. And if everybody in the world used proper wisdom, there'd be no wars, no problems. The thing is, people won't do that. People are more involved in themselves. And God's said that what Solomon asked him, it says that it pleased God. And because he didn't ask for these things that maybe normal people would ask for in the world. Yes. Is to listen. One of them.
And that's the first thing we have to do. What most people want to do now is talk first. I'll tell you what I think. You know, then they walk away from that.
That's right.
But we're to listen. And he's talking about here listening to God. That's where wisdom comes from.
Right. And that's one of the things that David told him to do, to follow in the past and the teachings and the testimonies of the law of Moses and the things that were right. And then... So that's what an understanding heart has to have, one that hears, a heart that is open to the truth. And as the parable of the sower in the New Testament, what does one out of the four have that's good? A true and an honest heart, an understanding heart. And if we can work on that, and I think that we can, then we can also have that good and understanding heart. Again, he emphasizes if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So God may be asking us, what can I do for you? The proper thing would be maybe to ask for wisdom, as Solomon asked for, and it pleased God. Go to the book of Proverbs. Go to the first chapter of Proverbs. And, of course, these were mainly written by Solomon. One who fears God is wise. Let me begin reading in verse 1 and read down through several of the verses, through verse 7, basically. My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search her as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. And find the knowledge of God. And the Lord gives wisdom. From His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. We could read some more verses too, but look at what He said there. Number one, He said, if you receive my words. And then a little further down, He says in verse 5, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. What does He mean by fear of the Lord?
Reverence.
Awe and respect. When we fear God, well, actually, what did Solomon say in Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter? What, after he had reviewed his whole life and reviewed all the things that he had done and the opportunities that he had because he had money and wealth and power, he could do all these things that maybe he had dreamed of, he thought of. And they weren't good, many of those things. They were enjoyable, I'm sure, and pleasurable. And he involved himself in a lot of things of the world. But in the end, what was the conclusion? Fear God and keep His commandments. And all those things that he had indulged in, when he died, they went away. And he was going to reap the results of what he had done. And so he said, what was one of the things that's said over and over in the Ecclesiastes? What?
Vanity of vanities,
all is vanity. And he said, do what you want, or enjoy the days that you have in the sun. Eat, drink, and be merry. But then the conclusion of the whole matter is to fear God. That means to pay Him respect and understand that He's our Creator. He's the one who has the plan of salvation, the scheme of redemption for us. He had the plan from before the worlds were formed. And you realize He formed the worlds with Christ and the Holy Spirit there. And He made us out of the dust of the ground. And woman out of the man's rib. And He breathed into them the breath of life. And man became a living soul. And so He wants us to do what His plan is. And His plan eventually was to give man a law. And the law was given by Moses. And the old law, the law of Moses, was in effect for many years. And even Christ was under that. And then when He died, the new law came into effect. He shed His blood. He died for us. And Christ's law came into effect. So we're under that law now. Though we respect, we fear God, we understand what He's done for us. And by reading the Old Testament, we can understand the new. And the things that were written before time are written for our knowledge and for our examples, for our understanding. And the fear of the Lord is wise, because we find knowledge of God. For God gives wisdom from His mouth, and come knowledge and understanding. If we want to have knowledge and understanding of how God operates and what God's rewards are, and not only His rewards and promises, good promises, there are also some other promises there. There's also the terror of the Lord, the terror of God. Just as He presented terror to those sinners and bad people in the Old Testament, He did that physically. In the New Testament, we also have to understand that God is good and all the good things come from God and He doesn't change. But there's also the terror of God. We don't want to be a part of that. So we need to use wisdom. We need to fear God and keep His commandments. And though we don't have the opportunities that Solomon did, Solomon is able to express it in the book of Ecclesiastes, I think, very well about the things that we can confront, whether it's the good things we may think are good that actually are not for us. What did Moses say as the account is given in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, about maybe the pleasures of sin? Right. He had choice to make there. As you recall, he was in the little boat there when he was a child. And Pharaoh's daughter found him and kept him in her house. And he could have been the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But he chose to serve God and God's people and do what God wanted him to do instead of the pleasures of sin for a season. Sin can be pleasurable, but it only lasts for a little while. And if we have pleasure all of our life, still just a little while, because we're here just for a little time. Like that vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. So the fear of the Lord is wise. If we have that fear of the Lord, what can our families also have? You know, Natalie's over there. She's blessed, I think, that she's in a godly family, was born in a godly family. Now, she didn't have anything to do with that. And how she grows and the things that she learns and the places she goes and the things that she looks at and sees, she may end up doing. That's why I'm glad that she's with Bo. And I think that she's going to be raised properly. And she's cute too. But kids, you know, they do follow the examples that we give them. And they listen to the things that we teach them. And we need to teach them more about prayer, about praying to God and what is important in one's life. And that the fear of the Lord is wise. That's the main thing. We need to seek. What's the first thing that we need to seek? The kingdom. Matthew 6:33, I think. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And not worry about the money so much, not worry about the physical things that we have. If we have enough to eat and we have enough to buy clothes and shelter and can take care of our families, then the blessings of God and the things that are waiting for us, we search for those hidden treasures, the treasures that people in the world can't see. We want to be a part of the world. You know what we're going to be a part of? What's in the world? What's in the world? Sin. What are the three things, the three ways that we can sin? The lust of the eye, the pride of life, lust of the flesh. That's what's in the world. Now, we can be a part of that, or we can be a part of those who fear God and keep His commandments. So, right.
So we don't. We should not think of if we can try not to have sin and try to keep, like you say, I pray for wisdom and wisdom and knowledge for the elders. You know, for they rule us and they rule us well. So when you had on Proverbs, you know, I was studying that. So we should have wisdom and knowledge and the
That's right. There's no doubt that we're part of the world. Every day we have things to do and places to go, and people may run into our cars, and that's part of the world. We may run into people's cars, and we have the responsibilities of taking care of situations like that. And there are other situations that we have, decisions to be made. But spiritually speaking, we are God's family, and we are a spiritual group. And we're looking forward to what's after this life. In this life, we are sojourners, and we're just passing through. And our life, compared to eternity, is not long at all. We live to be 100, which I'm shooting for. Right. 1 Corinthians, he discusses, makes that point, doesn't he? That there is a wisdom of the world. You know, there are a lot of smart people out there. A lot of smart people. A lot of smart business people. A lot of smart college professors. And a lot of smart people that we just meet from day to day. But they're not necessarily smart as far as the knowledge and understanding of God. And they don't fear God. Back when I was in college and I looked at a video, and Lynette knows that I look at YouTube every once in a while, and one of the things I looked at was Buddy Payne. And he reminded me of when he was in college, and we were classmates in college, and he ended up eventually going to Harvard and all that, and I ended up going somewhere else, lesser than Harvard. But he had some experiences. And if you look on YouTube, look up Buddy Payne, and he'll explain to you that when we were in college, it was the thing that going around that God is dead. God is dead. And when I went to Temple Terrace Church down there, one of the members there was A.W. Dykus. He had whiter hair than I did, but he was a college professor and a very smart man. But he wrote a song, and I don't know, you haven't preached that song yet, have you? Our God is alive. Our God, He is alive. He wrote that song because of the movement that was going on at that particular time, not only in Tampa but or in Florida, but all across the country, that God is dead. The mayor of Tampa came and spoke to us, and he spoke, and he said that he was at a USF dinner one time, or it had been recently. His name was Mayor Greco at that particular time, and he was at USF, University of South Florida, at this meal. And so one of the students got up and prayed and said, "Yay, yay, thanks for the food, God is dead," or something like that. There was no respect for God. They were showing just the opposite of the fear of the Lord. And so that's why Brother Dykus, one of the reasons Brother Dykus wrote that song, "Our God, He is Alive." You look at the words to that and you'll understand what he is saying. And I know that as we sing it, we do understand that. But we're not in a part of this world. If we become a part of this world, then we're going to be a part of sin. And sin separates us from God. That's another death. So one who fears the Lord is wise. Go to Proverbs, the 13th chapter. And verse 1. Will, how about reading that? Proverbs 13, verse 1.
A wise son accepts his father's discipline, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke.
A wise son heeds his father's instructions, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. What's a scoffer? What's a scoffer? One who scoffs, in other words. One who laughs at. I think that one who is wise listens to their parents. We don't have the small kids in here, but the parents, you know, have a responsibility to do what? To raise their children how? In the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And they are to obey you in the Lord. When you do the right things, then they are to obey you. And that's, Bo, starting when they're just small. And when you do that, they have the opportunity then and the knowledge and the understanding of the fear of the Lord. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. Sometimes, as children, we may have scoffed at or made fun at maybe some of the things our father and mother wanted us to do. Back in the day, I remember my daddy was a preacher. So we went to all the classes. We went to the vacation Bible schools. I went to the men's training class when I got up, became a member of the church. I went. So I was the youngest one there. I went and he wouldn't let me do a lot of things that I wanted to do. I wasn't even allowed to go to sock hops just to go, not to dance or anything like that. I wasn't even allowed to go. I remember I played basketball and I was going to get my eighth grade, I think, and I was going to get my first letter sweater if I lettered. And they were going to announce it at the sock hop. Nope. And I'm glad now. It was a little embarrassing to me back then. I couldn't even do the square dancing in PE. And I'm glad. Because Daddy taught me some principles. He taught me to fear God and to keep His commandments. Wow. I know how Bruce feels. I'm on the second point of seven. I may just continue doing this up here. 5 minutes, okay. Yes. Absolutely.
And not be scoffers.
That's right.
That's what you're talking about those guys that God did. They were scoffers.
That's right.
And they're doing it today.
Absolutely. They were scoffing. The back of there when the God is dead was really a big movement. But they're doing it today too. Good point. That they are putting emphasis upon worldly knowledge and things that are revealed in the classrooms and things that you can look and prove scientifically. And they a lot of their theories are just that. They're theories that have caused people to leave the church, I think. That they present things that are not true facts. They present their theories. I have an app on my phone from the National Geographic people. And I don't know how to get those memos stopped, but every once in a while, boop, something will pop up there and they'll say, new Neanderthal man found proving evolution is true, or something like that. And a lot of those things, they look good and they may have some eventual fact associated with it, but it's not a proven fact. That's like, is there a God? And in that speech that I was talking about on YouTube, Buddy Payne talks. He explains to people, and he presents the lesson for those who are not members of the church. He uses Scripture to begin with and to end with because he's in a church building, in a gospel meeting, and a special lectureship to see if it reasonable to believe that God exists. But he approaches it from the standpoint that you're not members of the church. How can you prove that God exists? Or is it reasonable, more reasonable to believe that God exists than that He doesn't exist? You can't prove that God exists by seeing you. No one has seen God. You can't go out there and look except the heavens declare the glory of God. Except that way. So using the scientific method, you can't prove that. But using the scientific method, you can't prove that He does not exist either. And so you're going to have faith one way or the other. Faith that God exists or faith that He doesn't exist. But one of the things that we need to have is fear of the Lord. We need to have godly parents. We know that in Ephesians, the 6th chapter, that they're to honor their mothers and fathers. And they're to obey them in the Lord. So we need to be godly parents. We need to fear and depart from evil. That's in Proverbs, the 14th chapter, verse 16. Don't come close to evil. Don't play with it. The devil is like a roaring lion, seeking whom he can devour. And the good point is that he's not a long-distance runner. He's not a fast runner, but he is a hidden runner. He is stealthy. And he'll lay in wait, and he will devour you if you give him that opportunity. One who listens to counsel, Proverbs 12, verse 15. One who listens, as Roger pointed out, that's part of the understanding and part of that good heart, is to listen. One of the things that we were taught in some of these seminars when I was working was to be a good listener. If you're in the interview process, you ask questions, yes, but you also listen attentively at what they have to say as they're interviewing. That helps you make a decision whether they're to be hired or not to be hired. But listen to counsel is a wise person. One who refrains his lips, one who controls his tongue, Proverbs 10, verse 19. Of course, we know James 3 also is a wise person. Proverbs 11:30 is one who wins souls is wise. And we can do that by living right and then doing right. Matthew 7, the wise man built his house upon the rock. Let's build our house there. Thank you.